Welcome to Rates and Barrels. It is Friday, April 2nd, one day of the 2021 season in the books, and it was an eventful one. Derek Van Riper here with Eno Saris on this Friday, reacting to everything we saw and telling you to calm down. Yeah, like we're going to try and calm you down in many cases. Maybe we'll fire you up in a few cases, but we're here to help just ease the tension going into the weekend. We don't want you to dump all your players and pick everybody up off the waiver wire. We want you to make the right moves, the right decisions. So we're going to fly around. We're going to do this a little bit different. We're going to go game by game, talk about some things that were interesting, some things that you should not overreact to, and hopefully it's going to be a lot of fun along the way. It was great seeing fans back in the stands because empty stadiums are weird, and even quarter capacity stadiums look a lot more normal, especially this time of year, right? I mean, snow was falling in Detroit yesterday, and you wouldn't have had that many fans there on a normal opening day with those weather conditions and that team being in a rebuild, but it made for a lot of fun scenes around the league. Let's start with the first game of the day, Jays-Yankees. It was a Cole Ryu pitching matchup, so it was a great one for everyone to sort of break their teeth on to start the season. What stood out to you in that first game of the day?
Well, it's funny. Gary Sanchez got so cheap in drafts over the course of draft season that even though I was fading him at the beginning of draft season, at the end I got, I think, two or three shares. And I think he might hit 210, and that does make it a little bit tough on you in batting average leagues. But looks like the power's back. And I don't think, yes, you can overreact, but he hit the ball really hard. It was like 110 or something. It also just reminds you, it's not necessarily like, oh my God, you know, it's more like, oh yeah, right. You know, there was the other Gary Sanchez other than last year. So I don't know. It's not really useful information because either you bought in or you didn't, I guess you could. And now is not the time to like send an offer over.
No. But I was more in on Sanchez than out at the price. I felt like the batting average risk was fine. I'll take that from a catcher. The power's real. So a little bit of validation for me being on Gary Sanchez, relatively speaking. I don't have him everywhere. I think the flaws are worth it at the price, right? Because the run production to go with that power should be well above average, especially
for the position. Yeah. But the real one was like, I think the wish to go out and pip roster Julian Merriweather everywhere, which if you've been listening, you know, we've been touting the praises of Julian Merriweather. The problem is I think that his usage, and this is why a lot of leagues, I think you shouldn't pick him up, because his usage suggests they held on to him in case they needed multiple innings. I think that they held on to him in case they needed two innings, right? Because they went into extra innings. I think Dolis is next in line in that bullpen.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right way to look at it for now, because Dolis ended up working the eighth in that matchup. Jordan Romano got the win in relief. And I think as a group, I think we are pretty optimistic about the Jays relievers, even though it's a group of not necessarily the most established relievers, right? It's not the dominant bullpen that pops into your head when you think of league's best bullpens, but I think they'll at least be an above average.
Their bullpen is better than their non-Ryu starters, in other words.
Yeah. And I think the concern I would have for them, especially with the Kirby Yates injury, they're one shorter in the bullpen, and the workloads are going to catch up to that bullpen if those starters are consistently going short.
This is not Kirby.
Do people get that wrong?
I shoehorned that in.
Yeah, you really wanted to show the Pikachu shirt there. So glad you got it some FaceTime. So Julian Merriweather save, you know, exciting for you in deeper leagues where you have him, not necessarily a guy you're picking up right away. Maybe an AL-only staff filler would probably be where the line is still drawn from him.
But great arm. So, like, in a league, if it's really deep and you got a deep bench and you can stash someone, like, yeah, great arm.
Yeah, absolutely. The velo was definitely there. I think he had the third fastest pitch thrown in the game. Cole had the first two, but Julian Merriweather topping out at 99.1. So, definitely a nice opener for him. Cole did Cole things, you know, 8Ks over 5 and change. Looked pretty much like himself to me, so I don't know if there's a whole lot else in this game that we need to dig into, but I thought the Detroit-Cleveland game ended up being a lot more fun because I didn't know that weather was going to be that bad until we started to see highlights from it. If you haven't seen it, look for the Miguel Cabrera highlight. He homered in this game and slid into second base because it was snowing so hard he couldn't see the ball clear the outfield wall. So kind of a fun moment for Miggy there. And I believe it was Jason Stark who pointed this out on Twitter. That was Miguel Cabrera's first opening day home run since 2008. Seems kind of odd. I mean, obviously a lot of peak years still in that range. So.
Dude, that was the second thing that had happened for the first time since 2008 yesterday. Because I did a little research for Trent Rosecrans, and Joey Votto popped up twice in his game, and that was the first time that had happened since 2008. So, no country for old men, I guess.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, what else hasn't happened in 13 years? It's going to happen. Gregory Soto got the save, and I was recording at the time this game ended, and then I was tweeting at you about it. I said, hey, Gregory Soto! And I put the Linda Belcher gif on there, because that's the inside joke, I guess, at this point, but you told me not to look at the outing. So how bad was it in terms of
I was like,
what was
don't look at
happening?
Anything else. Just look at the save. I mean, he gave up a homer, gave up two hits. One of them was a hard hit. Didn't strike out a guy. It's one of those things where you just like, you hope it was just a bad outing. Because I would say that one thing that people might rush to take away from this is that Shane Bieber's velo was down. He gave up a homer. He gave up three runs. Matthew Boyd's velo was down. Greg Soto didn't really finish the game well. You know, there's a lot of things you could try and take away from this. It was like you said, man, it was like inclement weather. And I remember kind of overreacting to some cold weather velo in the past. I even looked into it, and velo wasn't down that big across all cold weather, but I think there are sort of like layers of cold weather. There's like, oh, it's a little bit nipply, and then there's like, we are in a blizzard. What is going on here? So I'm willing to give Bieber a pass for the low velo in the first outing, especially since we didn't really hear about it all spring. I'm willing to give Boyd a little pass on that. And I'm hoping that this is just one of those ugly saves that gives Gregory Soto another chance. And then in the next one, he strikes out two clean slate, you know, looks more presidential as it would be.
If a player's stability in the closer role were a vending machine, I would say what Gregory Soto did on opening day was the first push to start rocking it back and forth to tip it over. And for someone who's more established, the first push doesn't happen on opening day with a bad outing, right?
Right.
We'll get to Soto Twins in a few minutes.
Like marginal.
Right. Alex Colomade doesn't quite have that happening just yet. But for Gregory Soto, brand new closer, yeah, things get a little bumpy right away. If you prefer boat analogies, the boat is starting to rock a little bit. So he can settle it down. He can get the vending machine back on all four legs. He can get the boat, you know, nice and steady with a couple of clean outings. And I think in terms of pure stuff, is it fair to say he has the best stuff in the Tigers bullpen at this point?
Yeah, I think so. Cisneros is decent as well. But Cisnero, for example, in a win was used in the seventh. So Daniel Norris is your setup guy?
I've always liked Daniel Norris. That was before we knew that he's a guy that lives in a van.
I just don't see him as the next closer, though. I want to see when they use Fulmer next. I want to see how they use him.
I'm a little bit intrigued by Fulmer as a reliever. I think that could actually work. And if Soto, in fact, does tip the vending machine over, Michael Fulmer could be there to pick up all the Snickers bars.
I had a friend in college who the vending machine dropped on his leg.
Jeez.
And of course, we all wanted to scatter. We weren't doing anything.
Yeah, you know, vending machines just tip themselves over all the time. So I'm sure no one you were with had anything to do with that thing falling over.
I bit the bullet. And even though I thought I might get in trouble, I was like, this guy's hurting. I'm going to stay here with him. He had a big old bone bruise in his thigh. But don't drop Shane Bieber.
Right? Don't drop Shane Bieber.
12 strikeouts, help people with that. In 6 innings. Turns out he's still pretty good.
Yeah, he is going to be fine. I think the one thing I would ask you, you know, just as a broader question as we keep going through games, does lineup position matter to you on opening day? I mean, you have to account for the handedness of the opposing pitcher, of course, and think about it more like that. But do you start to look at the initial lineups and say, okay, this is a pretty good window into how the team is viewing where these players belong, at least for the start of the year?
I think you'll have to also look in tandem with the handedness of the opposing hitter. The opposing pitcher. And so I think that will come up with another name, unless we want to transition to that Rockies game you were mentioning.
Yeah, let's go there. We don't have to go in perfect order.
Right. Let's just jump over that one, because I think we were talking about this. Josh Fuentes had the two-hole.
Mm-hmm.
But, and as much as I think Josh Fuentes is kind of interesting, and I picked him up in a short-term league, who's hurt that's allowing him to play? Oh, Rodgers.
Yep.
So they're playing McMahon at second. But Fuentes is, I'm just making sure this, I don't say something stupid, but I'm guessing he's a righty. Yes. So Fuentes is a righty. I doubt that he's necessarily batting second against non-left-handers. It looks like the Rockies have convinced themselves they're the new Rays. And so they're going to platoon all over this new thing called platooning.
Hey, they won. They won yesterday. We can't.
We can't.
We can't take
still.
Them down.
We can still kick them. because they didn't start my damn Sam Hilliard, man. I guess Hampson 1-for-3 with 2 runs and a walk. I guess they were right.
Hilliard against Kershaw is a tough matchup, but I think you would find a way for Hilliard to get into the game later.
Urias? Because bring him in, sub him in. Instead, they subbed McMahon in and Jonathan Daza. Somebody was making the point that this is a really bad lineup.
It's a very bad line. Jeff Zimmerman was saying it's bad.
And Coors isn't necessarily like a... It doesn't make home runs happen, at least.
I think you're still going to throw great pitchers in there, even when the Rockies are good. And the Rockies are bad right now. So it's just a question of how far down your ranks are you willing to go throwing pitchers in Colorado? Like, that's a little more of an open question now than it has been in past years. When you knew before, like most years when they were good, Blackman at his peak, Arenado there, right? You'd look at that lineup and say, yeah, I'm not really throwing anyone but like a top five
not throwing
top eight pitcher there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 10, yeah.
But in most circumstances this year, I think you could be more aggressive.
Kershaw got rocked, didn't have a called strike or whiff percentage over 30% on any of his 3 pitches. Gave up max exit velocities over 100 on the slider and the four seam. Sat 91. I don't know, man. It's still pretty tough out there, I guess.
Yeah, but I think the main takeaway here, does lineup position matter on opening day? I mean, yes, a little bit. It could be an indicator that they really believe in the platoon of McMahon and Fuentes being something that keeps Ryan McMahon from playing against lefties. You know, if Brendan Rodgers were there...
It's annoying as heck.
If Brendan Rodgers were there, Chris Owings maybe doesn't play.
They found a way to get Chris Owings into the game instead of putting McMahon or Hilliard in. And I guess it worked out, but that means that you downgrade Hampson, Hilliard, Fuentes, McMahon, all of them. None of them is an every down back. And if you're in a weekly league, they're kind of like they're borderline plays anyway because they're not good bats, right? They're okay, right? If you were like, okay, every time they have 5 games of Coors, I'm going to play them. Good. Except like with Hilliard this week, he had 4 games in Coors. And I was like, okay, I'll start him. Well, I didn't in the end. I ended up putting people like Brian Reynolds and even Rowdy Tellez in over Sam Hilliard, even though he's home for 4 because he was only going to play 2 of them.
Yeah. That's frustrating because My argument would be, instead of trying to mix and match, instead of trying to be the Rays or the A's or a team that has that sort of lefty-righty balance at the positions where you're a little bit weaker, develop the players. Let Ryan McMahon have a shot against lefties. So you're not winning games is not the goal here. Player development is the goal. And if you can give a player who hasn't been getting opportunities against lefties, give those players those opportunities, you might be surprised at what happens. You might see a little bit of growth. You might see a guy that becomes an everyday player instead of a big side platoon guy. But I don't know. They're following a script without knowing like why they're following it, I guess, is what they're kind of trying to do there.
The Rays did it.
Yeah, I mean, like it's a smart tactic, but it's just like you should be doing it for the purpose of something. If you're trying to win games, great, you're trying to win games, but they can't possibly think they're going to contend in that division. Austin Barnes started for the Dodgers. I believe he's basically the personal catcher for Clayton Kershaw, right? So that's not a sign that Will Smith isn't going to start
something about
most
it
of the games this year.
Maybe being more closer to 50-50 than people thought.
Every single time that Dave Roberts talked about Will Smith, he was lowering Will Smith's playing time. It was very strange. I don't think I believe it.
They have said this in the past where, like, you know, you saw Grandal, you know, sit for Barnes in the postseason. And then they would talk about, oh, we're really trying to mix in Barnes. We're really trying to mix in Barnes. And then Grandal, you know, usually got his 500 plate appearances.
Yeah. I mean, Will Smith played 37 games last year, right? Barnes played 22, something like that. He was hurt for a little while, I think. 29. So 60-40? I mean, if it's 60-40...
That's pretty typical.
But that was with a universal DH last year, too.
Right.
So I think they'll scale back Barnes a little bit more. He's a good defender, but I wouldn't look at him starting on opening day and be worried if I had Will Smith. And I don't think I have Will Smith.
They could have used one
anywhere.
More bat yesterday in the end. And they actually brought Will Smith in for a little bit, but he didn't get a plate appearance.
Yeah, so... interesting stuff there in the Rockies-Dodgers matchup. Let's get to the Brewers and Twins. I thought this one was over. I thought the Twins had it in the bag. They were on their A bullpen, lined it up the way they wanted. They went. I took Hazel to the park and started listening to the game because I had some stuff I had to do. Like, oh, the sun's going to go down soon. I'll listen to Uke on the radio and, you know, better luck next time. But they rallied, and I enjoyed the rally on the radio. The Twins went with Rogers in the 7th, Hansel Robles in the 8th, and Colomé in the 9th, but I'm not looking at the Twins on any given day and saying that's the pattern, because they, I think, are the team most likely to be like the Rays start to finish with how they handle their late inning relievers. The Twins could be one of those teams that have 6 different guys get a save between now and the end of the season.
I think that's true. But it is interesting that Colomé and Mark Melancon keep getting closing opportunities, even though their strikeout totals are mediocre, and that the cutter dampens exit velocity when you look at pitch types, and that they're both cutter first guys. Even in yesterday's not great game, Colomé's average exit velocity, someone did hit his cutter 110. But the average exit velocity on his cutter was 84, suggesting that there was a few that were way lower. Yeah, the min was 48.5. So he saws people off with that cutter, and he still does. One thing that that stood out for me when I ran spin rates from this year and last year, just wondering, because, you know, I did have a couple DMs of like, hey, are people getting shelled today because their spin rates are down? And
yeah.
And because, you know, they're cracking down on pitch grip stuff, so they're not using it. I would say that's, you know, from what I see, it's not the case. Colomé was one of, let's see here, 12 pitchers that lost more 200 or more RPM on their spin on their fastball. But a lot of those guys were relievers, did not throw fastballs as their primary pitch. I don't know. I like the names on the list of people who lost fastball spin rate are not the reason, like not the reason that people got shelled. Like if you think about it, like an ace that got shelled, they didn't lose their spin rate. The people who lost spin rate were Adam Simber, Tyler Rogers, who wants lower spin rates. I think Chichi Gonzalez probably wants lower spin rates. Kyle Cody and Alex Colome, who threw three fastballs. So when I did a weighted difference in terms of who, like what the if spin rate was down as a whole, you know, weighted, it was minus 11. And that is not significant. And, you know, the only sort of significant starting pitcher that I saw that was anywhere close to 200 was Zach Greinke at minus 194. I suppose it's possible, but there's also the question of velocity. And I probably still want at least two starts to say, two appearances to say anything really definitive about this. But if I had to guess right now, I'd say no. And also, I was watching the games, and there were plenty of people still touching the bills of their hats.
Yeah. Also, velo was good for a lot of pitchers. Josh Hader topped out at 99.6. Woodruff out at 99.2. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was in the high 90s a lot yesterday. I wondered how much Hader talked about it after the game. I saw a quote from him. Having fans back in the stadium maybe added a little adrenaline for some players, you know, being back in their home stadiums for the first time in front of fans.
I mean, in Oakland, I went to the game last night. It was, you know, it was a sellout, quote unquote, at 20%, 10,000 people. And it was one of those crowds where you could hear, I mean, the Astros were in town too. So like they were heckling constantly. What was funny about it was you could hear every single heckle. Like you could hear specifically what they were saying, you know, and like
that's like a fall league environment but with 10,000 people. That's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, so I heard some very specific ones like, nobody likes you, Alex Bregman.
He feeds off that stuff. Damn. Though that guy doesn't care. Like, I mean, maybe on like a really personal level, like if someone he cared about said they didn't like him and no one liked him, then it would bother him. But I think he feeds off of it. I think he has this this side where he likes being a villain. He homered in that game, by the way.
Oh yeah. I mean, he took me aside in the clubhouse one day and was like, "Tell me why defensive metrics are wrong and I should be an MVP candidate." And I was like, "Well, they might be. They might be wrong. You do a lot of shifting. They throw out all the shifts." There was one that was like whatever his wife's name was, Bregman's wife, and she married a cheater.
Jeez.
But I would say they're not in midseason form yet. Having been a heckler in my past, and I apologize profusely for all the things I said at Stanford basketball again. I would say that they were not in midseason form. We've lost the plot. Oh, spin rates. Yes, I don't think Alex Colome's spin rate on his four seam being down means that he used to use goop and doesn't anymore, or that there's a general problem with that in baseball.
No, I don't think it means that either. Byron Buxton hit a really long home run in that game, 456 feet. He got a 75 mile an hour, just grooved pitch from Eric Yardley and killed it.
Not the hardest hit ball in the game.
No, Vogelbach had the hardest hit ball in that game.
He did, into the ground though.
Yeah, hey, you know what? We'll launch it next time. Unfortunately, Josh Donaldson left early with an injury, so we'll see if that turns into an IL situation. I was wondering if they would bring Alex Kirilloff up right away if Donaldson misses time, because Arias would have to play a lot of third base, and you don't really want to play Jake Cave. Like, you can't, if you're the Twins, you can't really afford to take a big hit offensively for a couple of weeks. Like, you need Kirilloff up there to replace Donaldson's offensive production, so I think there's at least a chance if Donaldson hits the IL that we'll see Kirilloff a little sooner than previously.
Here's a weird
planned
quirk in the box score. It has Luis Arias listed as only playing third base the whole game in the first spot. And then in the second spot, it has Josh Donaldson playing third base and giving in to Jake Cave in left field. So what happened was Luis Arias was listed as the left fielder, but he never played there because Donaldson got hurt in his first plate appearance. So
that's
it really
weird.
Should say quirk. LF3B, but he never played there. I'm not gonna yell at anybody about this. I don't even know if it's wrong. I think it could be right. I think this might be right, but it does look like they had two third basemen for the game, which is weird. I would agree. I don't think they would want to start Jake Cave a lot, and the easiest way to get more offense back is Alex Kirilloff. Donaldson, it was the hamstring, not the calf. However, it's just really old man-itis. And you're just hoping that it's, you know, not a DL stint.
Yeah. old man legs, mm-hmm. unfortunately, for Josh Donaldson at this stage. Let's get to the Cubs-Pirates matchup. You know, Dustin Fowler had the hardest hit ball in that game. Blast from the past with Fowler getting this opportunity in Pittsburgh. Quite a few roster adjustments. Brian Goodwin was the guy that they let go at the end of spring. So at least for now, it's going to be Fowler or Jared Oliva, the guy we're sort of waiting on to get an opportunity in Pittsburgh at some point in the next few weeks. But the guy that kind of stood out for a lot of people was David Bednar. And I think he came up on this show as either a deep, deep sleeper or a possible fallback option if Richard Rodriguez falters or gets traded at some point. And I think he opened a lot of eyes with that opening day performance.
Yeah, I mean, he was in that trade with...
Yeah, the Musgrove deal.
Ah, right. And so part of the sort of quantity over quality approach, but looked pretty quality. You know, I think that he was on my radar. I just didn't know how close he was to the end of that bullpen. And I will have to admit, it is nice that he sat 96 got a bunch of whiffs on the curveball and splitter. Did not get any whiffs on the fastball or called strike. So a little bit wild. The other thing is Kyle Crick is away from the team with mono. I still think Richard Rodriguez is a closer. There are some people out there who still think Kyle Crick is the closer. He just has COVID. So I would say I still think it's Richard Rodriguez. I think there's like a fair amount of inertia in this closer thing, especially if like everything's going okay, where you say, well, we're not going to mix things up. Kyle, we're going to get you into the eighth and stuff. So I think that'll push Bednar further away is my long-winded way of saying Bednar looks close. He's good. I think once Kyle Crick comes back, he steps back one.
Yeah, I think he's more of a watch list guy that could end the year as the Pirates closer, yeah, as opposed to someone we're going to be bidding on in fab pickups in the next couple of weeks. But certainly looks like a nice piece in that Pittsburgh bullpen. This was one of the games I didn't really get a chance to look very closely at. A couple hard hit balls from Rizzo. Brian Hayes hit the ball hard three times. That's encouraging. This Pirates lineup, as we've predicted or talked about a few times, play any pitcher you want against them. Like I know they put five runs on the board on opening day. They chased Kyle Hendricks early. Hendricks only went three.
Command gave up wasn't three quite runs, there.
Which is weird for Hendricks. Like for him to have an off day. It was a little cold so
early in the season.
Don't know how much that played into it. But I'm looking at this Pirates lineup, and I'm having a hard time thinking of a pitcher I've rostered that I wouldn't want to start against them right now.
And even though it ended up being a 5-3 game, I think that Cole Wrigley is still a decent place to look for early starts.
Because
Cool was like, couldn't find the strike zone in the first inning. And I thought, oh God, this is going to go terribly. But in the end, the box score, for Cool was okay. You know, two strikeouts, three walks, one run in three innings. Like, it wasn't terrible. That you get out of that with that. I think it speaks a little bit to how cold and uncomfortable it was for hitters. So Hayes did take him deep, and in the end, but it was a 4-hour affair with lots of different pitchers. I wouldn't take away anything other than Cole Wrigley is a good place to stream. Arrieta is still a good stream. I still think that there's some good Pirates you can stream in these. I think they'll generally be lower scoring games.
Yeah, I think that all checks out for me too. Just falls in line with my expectations. Braves Phillies, interesting matchup here. Gene Segura ended up winning this one with a walk-off hit. I know he's a guy that you've got a bunch of places, so that definitely makes you happy. But
stolen base, John Segura, stolen base. Do you know how rare stolen bases are? Have you it's now the number one thing I look for in a box score. I scan both sides immediately for a stolen base, and most of the time it's zeros. Right? Let's look at this box
score.
Get in
there. Who ran? Who was running?
Who ran?
Who was stealing bases?
Nobody.
You know what I look for actually too, though, when I look for stolen bases, I want to know who is behind the plate and who is pitching when it happened, because that might actually lead you to where the next stolen bases are coming from. It's not always
Yeah, people are being super opportunistic about them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I think at the beginning of last year, remember Tommy Pham was running all over the D-backs. I think it was Carson Kelly who was behind the plate. And I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to keep an eye on who's got the D-backs in these next couple series. And, you know, if there's a fringy player that I need to put in my lineup or pick up off the wire, I'm going to see if that's a way to get a few extra saves or steals, rather. So it's one of those things that you can kind of poke into a little bit and actually find some sneaky good matchups that people don't usually look for.
I got to complain about the Savant box scores, man.
No steals?
No steals. It's obviously made by nerds. And I say that affectionately. Because Fried's, they're not that interesting. But Nola shoved, Fried shoved, one stolen base in the whole game. Alvarado pitched the eighth.
He did, and Neris was named the closer, I believe, before the game. So after all of that, after all the speculation that Bradley, when he went there, he was going to become the guy, that Alvarado made the most sense, they go back to the old standby with Neris. And he was good. He was good this spring.
Alvarado's next. Yeah. Almost always the eighth inning guy replaces the ninth inning guy. Like, usage in season closer changes are totally predicted by who's pitching the eighth almost. If there's any doubt, then you can, like, if there's two people pitching the eighth, then you start to go into handedness, velocity, and strikeout rate, and that sort of stuff. But Alvarado's next. Neris can hit a bout of wildness at any moment. So I think he's, even if he is a closer, I think he's a bottom third closer. Or what do you think? 15, 10 to 15? 15 to 20? Yeah.
20 is kind of where he tops out. I actually see a lot of similarities between Neris and Matt Barnes. I think they could get you above average strikeout rates.
A lot of walks.
If they're good, they could be as good as anybody. But if they're bad, they're atrocious. I mean, Neris's year-to-year ratios are all over the road. We saw a 5.10 ERA, a 1.30 whip back in 18, a 2.93 and a 1.02 the year he had 28 saves in 2019, and a 4.57 with a 1.71 whip last season. Great this spring, though. So at least in good form to start the year. And I would agree with you. I think the other thing that's caught my ear when the Phillies are talking about their bullpen, they lean into Archie Bradley as a multi-inning guy a lot. Like, that's just been something they've made a point to talk about on multiple occasions. So I think that also makes me think they want to use him a little more flexibly, like sixth and seventh, right? You know, one in the third, one in two-thirds.
It's been a while since he's been a starter. He doesn't really have, he has two pitches.
I don't know. There's something about him that they like to use him a little more than the
other
guys.
Maybe his velo doesn't drop off, or maybe he has slightly, he probably has better command. I mean, he has better command than Neris and Alvarado.
Yeah, so you can leave him in there for four or five, six outs in some cases, whereas the other guys, you want to go three.
Three balls hit over 108, which is the kind of a magic number for max exit velo. Two of them by Austin Riley. The Austin Riley hype train continues. They'll have to make considerable room for Pablo Sandoval on that hype train.
He homered, by the way.
I'm sorry. He scored all. He hit in all of the runs for the Braves.
I didn't expect Pablo Sandoval to find playing time there at all.
Yeah, me neither.
That's very weird. So I'm going to not read much into that. I think NL only, very last guy on your roster. That's as far as I'm willing to go if everybody else is still healthy.
One thing to learn. I was going to say not much else to learn. One thing to learn. Adam Haseley started in the center.
Yes, he did.
Although it was against a lefty. Is Adam Haseley a righty, though?
No, I'm pretty sure Haseley's a lefty.
That's really big deal then, kind of.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that speaks to their lack
That's
of defensive options.
That's a big deal.
Options.
He's a starting center fielder. He's a starting center fielder. Boom. Yeah. I got a couple shares of that. Whew. Oh, wait, we're not supposed to overreact. But I still think Haseley in against the lefty, big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it could be more playing time than expected.
Looks like Quinn is the defensive replacement. I mean, he did.
And that's sort of that's how he hits. He's not enough of a hitter to play much more than that. Unfortunately, it'd be fun if he did, because he will steal bases when he gets chances to do it. Let's go to the D-backs and Padres. Madison Bumgarner quickly showing us again why we don't want to use low-end, mid-range starters even against the Padres. It's just obviously not the Padres teams we're used to. Yeah, Petco's still a great place to pitch, but that lineup can do damage, and they did plenty of it. 8-7, nice high-scoring game in San Diego in the opener. Eric Hosmer, a guy that I think I have absolutely nowhere. Homers on opening day after pounding the ball into the ground all
against
spring.
A lefty.
So that makes me feel good. Yep. Oh, yeah. Things are looking real good.
There's something else that we have to learn from this. Eno is a genius.
And
tell Marte. Yes, I'll do a victory lap after a 4-for-5 opening day with a home run and two batted balls over 105 miles an hour. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not above that. Sometimes it's just nice to see someone you have like 8 shares of do really well. Josh Rojas starting at second at shortstop is interesting. Do you think that I think he starts at second once Nick Ahmed is healthy.
Yeah, because the defense alone that Nick Ahmed provides, that gets him in the lineup. He's the guy as long as he's healthy. So I think.
But there was a little bit of a like undefined timing on Nick Ahmed, right? Like they were like, we don't know. They gave him some platelets or something. And
I think it's interesting though, because Rojas is second base only in a lot of leagues to start the season. So if it ends up being even a week, then Rojas picks up shortstop to go with it. And it was an 0-for-5, but he was leading off. I think that that was something they were doing in the spring, but they actually gave him the shot to do it on opening day too. So yeah. I think he gets at least a little bit of run atop the order. If he slumps for, I don't know, a couple series, maybe they'll shuffle it up and drop him in the order. But he at least has that chance to really hold down that spot to begin the year.
You know, I thought Bum looked okay. I think if he gets dropped in super deep leagues and he's not facing the Padres, I think he could be a decent streamer. I mean, he sat 90 plus, so at least it wasn't 88, 89. He had above a 30% called strikes and whiffs on the four-seam cutter and curveball. He got plenty of whiffs on them, too. I don't know, man. 14 whiffs on 91 pitches. I think, like, he looked pretty good. He looked pretty good. Even though the hit that Hosmer got was kind of inside, I didn't expect it to go out.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, I mean, day games play a little bit different than night games at Petco, so the ball could carry a little better, I think, in those conditions. I do think the problem with Bumgarner is something we've hit on a recent show. The Diamondbacks' schedule for the entire month is pretty tough. I think he's the kind of guy that gets bounced from rosters a lot in the next couple of weeks, and then we get to May, the schedule gets a little easier, and he becomes a decent pickup that actually sticks around in some at least deeper mixed leagues. I don't know if we're at the point where Bumgarner is going to be stuck on someone's roster in a 12-team mixed league going forward, but I don't think he's as done as the opening day line would lead us to believe.
Yeah,
there's one pretty clear drop in this game. Stephen Crichton, he came in and was pitching in the sixth inning of this game. So if you thought he was going to be part of the saves picture in Arizona, that to me is early enough in the game. I'm going to say it's probably safe to let him go this weekend, barring something pretty unforeseen with his usage between now and Sunday.
Weren't they even losing at the time?
Yes, I believe they were.
I mean, that's not good. It's not good to be used in a losing situation. A losing situation, not even, I guess a little bit, actually earlier in a losing situation is better than the ninth inning, you know, down by 4 or whatever. So like he's still right. Peripheries, but he's not, I can't imagine he's their setup guy or their closer being used. Hey, kudos to the people who said Mark Melancon would close. I still think he's kind of bottom half closer as is because of the strikeout rate. Pomerantz is obviously next in line. I would say that it's still worth keeping Pomerantz around. 3 strikeouts in an inning. He's going to keep your ratios pristine, keep you strikeouts, and he's next in line. So there's a lot of, I'd rather have Drew Pomerantz than like Julian Merriweather. I'd rather have Drew Pomerantz than Jose Alvarado probably, although that one's closer. Do you have anyone else you want to throw in this random who would you rather?
I'm trying to decide if I would hold Pagan in any deeper mixed leagues or not. Like if he's also a cut. I mean, he gets enough innings and the ratio should be good where...
I'd rather have Alvarado than Pagan. I'd rather be swimming upstream. I'd rather have the 8th inning guy than the 7th inning guy.
Yeah. I suppose in a mixed league, that's probably the move to make. But I think in deeper formats, like NL, I've got Pomeranz and Pagan in NL only. They were cheap in labor. They're fine. Like it, Melanson could fall apart. I mean, Mark Melanson went from guy that we didn't think the Giants could possibly trade to guy that the Braves paid the rest of the deal for after trading for him, used him as their closer over a more skilled guy in Will Smith, and then he ended up on a good San Diego team.
They did let him go, though. They didn't have a closer necessarily, and they let him go. So, yeah. I don't know. The cutter, though, I think the cutter is somehow key to this. There's like the Mariano Rivera, like chasing the Mariano Rivera profile, I guess. Anything else to learn? I think Cronenworth might be their starting second baseman.
Yeah, I might have been wrong about Cronenworth throughout draft season. I'm at least opening my mind to that possibility. I can't, after one day, say I'm totally wrong, but it was put to me this way, actually, during a draft on Thursday. Is the situation in San Diego one where we're making too much of how the playing time is actually being split up? Like, we're saying that Cronenworth doesn't have enough playing time, even though he can play all over. Like, we're saying, he's the ninth guy, he's the tenth guy, and teams play 9 or 10 guys. Like, they're going to take all those playing time situations.
It's like they're,
and give everybody 90 or 95%. Like, that still adds
six
up.
Six starters are still valuable.
Yeah. So it's like, other than maybe Tatis, who will almost never come out of the lineup, or Machado, like, as long as those guys are healthy, they're going to play every day. Everybody else is going to get a little time off.
Well, Hosmer should, but he's not yet.
Right, but like 90% shares for everybody else, right. 92% shares for everybody else. That's still great for everybody else, for Profar, for Cronenworth. So maybe I miscalculated. Maybe I made too much of the depth that they'd built.
There was like a tweet out of like, you know, do you have any FOMO players? And it, I think it's a little bit weird to say, yes, Jake Cronenworth, you know, on a day when there are, I'm sure there's other players that did well that I don't have any shares of. But for some reason, looking at that, I was like, oh, man, he was super cheap. And he's got a cool set of abilities, you know, in order to, he can make contact, has some power, can steal some bags. I could see him being on some winning teams at the end of the season where he only gets 500 plate appearances maybe, but he was super cheap and he got the person like a 280 average and, you know, 20 homers and 10 stolen bases anyway. You're just like, oh man, you got that for free.
Yep.
That's always the one that bothers me. It's never like a star that you paid top and then went and did star things. I'm always like, oh, you got that guy in the, with a 300th pick.
Yeah, it's those mid-round guys that got away that feel like you missed the opportunity the most because they were so affordable. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 million member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/rates23. That is linkedin.com/rates23. For a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/rates23 and get started today. All right, you know, I want to talk about the Marlins-Rays game. If you like great pitching, that game absolutely delivered. Tyler Glasnow looked fantastic. Sandy Alcantara pitched really well. I mean, just a 1-0 game where Austin Meadows' solo home run was the only offense for either side, 8 combined hits in this game. But Glasnow, the velocity, he topped out at 100.6 in his first start this season.
Yeah, and I was actually even more impressed by how many sliders he threw. He threw more sliders than curveballs. And he's really taken to that pitch. Got 42% called strikes and whiffs on that. The average on called strikes and whiffs, I think, is around 29. So did really well there. Wasn't hit hard. The max exit velo on the slider was 91. I think that obviously there's still some command issues, and I think that's a little bit risky to you know, to go so hard in on a pitch that has more side to side movement than his up down curveball when he has these histories of command issues. So there's a little bit of like, well, let's see what he does against another offense with that pitch. Maybe a more patient offense would have some issues with it. Wouldn't have as many issues with it. But 5 whiffs on the slider, 2 on the curveball, 7 on the four-seam fastball. Nothing really hit hard. Just a really great outing from Glasnow.
Only 77 pitches to get those 18 outs as well. But, I mean, Sandy Alcantara was just as good on the other side. Only allowed 1 more hit, 2 hits in 6 innings, 7 Ks from him, 4 hard hit balls, so a little more hard contact against him. But the big question throughout the offseason was, are we going to get more Ks? And a matchup against this iteration of the Rays lineup doesn't fully answer that question, because you go into a matchup with the Rays with your pitchers expecting a bump in Ks. That was their big flaw throughout last season. That could change once we get to the point where if Francisco Mejia is playing more than Zunino, if we get Wander up, maybe we get Vidal Brujan up, you change that lineup a little bit and suddenly they could be closer to a league average team in that category. But until further notice, they're a team that you're going to pick on if you're searching for Ks.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it is also true. Tsutsugo leading off, as they said. The only caveat I have to that is that Choi will be back at some point, and that also probably not against lefties. Probably a very different lineup against lefties. Probably get Wendell in there. What else changes against lefties?
Mike Brasso would get in. Wendell, I don't know, man. I think Wendell's just an extra guy. Yandy Diaz started against a righty. That was kind of strange to see yesterday. I would have expected that to be Wendell.
That's true. But he also is oft injured, so Wendell will have his uses this year. I still have him as like an interesting jack of all trades, best ball, you know, bench type piece that will have his weeks, but not a super big asset right now.
Jess Chisholm debuted, hit 6th, hit ahead of Alfaro, ahead of Rojas, and obviously ahead of the pitcher spot as well. I like that from a lineup construction standpoint, because one thing that's always bothered me is that you bring up a prospect and you think they're better than all but a handful of guys in your roster, but then you still hit them 8th. Oh, we got to ease them in. It's like, it's still the same pitcher they're going out there trying to hit. It's not making his job any easier hitting lower in the lineup. Like, just hit him where he belongs. Like, make your team optimal for how you want to play it.
I think it does make it a little bit easier to put him ahead of the pitcher because he'll get some walks that he wouldn't otherwise, but I don't think that it actually helps you evaluate the player. Like, if you're in evaluation mode at all and you pump up their walk rate just by putting him in front of the pitcher, and then you're like, well, what is his actual walk rate, you know? Like, is he?
Yeah, we saw that with Michael Franco a couple years ago, yeah. Right? A guy that doesn't really walk a lot. They dropped him to the 8th spot. He doubled his walk rate for a little while.
Got renewed discipline. I might have even said that. I'm not hating on anybody. I'm just saying you got to think about that. Alcantara looks beautiful. Love him. Just really good velocity. What worked the four-seam back in, which is where I thought if there was any upside left, it was working the four-seam back in for some whiffs, because he, you know, made the switch to sinker fine, but now you threw the four-seam enough when you were throwing it primarily. Why don't you work it back in to add another wrinkle? Then he's a true four-pitch guy, decent command of all of them, sat 98. I mean, hey, come on.
Let's get to the Reds-Cardinals game. Oof. Alex Reyes just blowing up the velocity list in that one. No, it was ugly. 11-6 was the final. Eugenio Suarez homered but made 2 errors. I mean, it was a mess for the Reds. And Luis Castillo got rocked, and that is definitely a concern. But was there anything in those struggles that makes you think there's going to be a carryover problem? Do we see a velo drop or anything in the underlying numbers that would give you some pause? Or do you think it was just a bad day that happened to be on opening day?
Well, I wanted to say with balls in play down so much, you know, Castillo being a strikeout pitcher, even though he's also a ground ball pitcher, I thought that the Suarez thing wouldn't affect him so much, but you just saw how it happened. You know, you just saw that there was an error and then there was a homer. I mean, it's just like, it's not necessarily always just the error. It's just like, it's another base runner, especially if it like, it's somebody that should have been an out. So just flipping that switch from out to base runner is pretty devastating. Castillo also shows as being down in velo 2.6 miles an hour.
That's a lot.
Did he really sit 97.5 last year?
Doesn't sound wrong.
It doesn't sound wrong to you?
97.5? No, I think he was throwing really hard last year.
Not a great start. And does make me wonder if it does make me wonder about if the defense matters, if we should have thought more about that for Castillo.
Well, yeah, definitely a concern coming out of the opener on that side. Wasn't a great day for Jack Flaherty on the other side either. 6 runs on just 4 1/3. 4 Ks, a couple home runs allowed. A lot of hard hit balls from Nick Castellanos. Certainly a good sign if you had him as a bounce back player this year. A lot of people did. I was a little more into Mike Moustakas, relatively speaking. Very into Nick Senzel. He hurt himself diving for a ball. No word yet how much time he's going to miss, but they said it was a shoulder injury when he left. Jonathan India debuted, hit 7th in the order, went 2 for 4 with the double, had a hard hit ball sprinkled in there as well too. So I don't know what plan B shuffling big league parts around would actually be. Like, I think they have to stick with this for a while unless they're going to go all glove and bring up Garcia or go to Farmer.
Castillo has been sitting above 97 this whole time.
Yeah, he throws really hard.
He sat 93 yesterday. I'm calling me worried, man. That's a big drop.
I'm worried, and it's the kind of drop that makes you wonder, was the tech working correctly? Like, was there something not calibrated right? I mean, we'd see with other pitchers, though, too, if that were the case. You'd see bigger drops on guys like Flaherty.
I'm seeing some pretty big drops. Yeah, there's a fairly big drops on everybody. Was it a cold game? So Flaherty was down 1.5. Tyler Webb was down 1.5. Ryan Helsley is a fireballer, but he was down on the four seam 1. Genesis Cabrera was down 2. Gallegos was down 1.2. Come on. Alex Reyes was down almost 1. Okay. So let's say we can take one of those and just take it off of his ledger. Because everybody,
that's still
was
another
one.
Big drop, though.
Yeah,
if you gave him 1.5, like, you're still,
yeah, it's still pretty,
you lost
big.
A lot more than that.
Well, okay, so my over under on his fastball next time out is 94.5, and that's still not 96, 97 like it used to be. Ah, man, it might be a long year in Cincinnati, man.
That's feel for our friend Clay Link. He loves that team, and he's just stuck with them right now. They were so exciting going into last season too.
India did well.
Yeah, 2 for 4 with a hard hit ball, a double in there. So nice day for him. Probably the weirdest game of the day: Royals Rangers, 24 runs combined. Like,
oh my good lord,
what on earth happened there? I mean, the interesting thing for me in the underlying numbers, Carlos Hernandez, the velo leader on the Kansas City side, but there's not much you can do with him from a fantasy perspective in the short term. Like, he's doesn't seem to be close to saves.
He's not a very good pitcher either. I think he just throws hard.
Right. I don't think he's like close to getting more innings or anything, no. But just one of those guys.
Santana hit 2 balls, 110.
Yep.
That's
power
pretty
still there for him.
One thing I did want to say on the bullpen side is that it was interesting that Holland came in with a ton of runs, but then they went to Wade Davis when it got tight. So there wasn't officially a save chance in this game, but looks like it's Wade Davis than Greg Holland. I don't know, though, because they didn't even use Stomont. Did they send Stomont down?
I don't think they. I didn't see that note if they did. which is weird because so many guys pitched yesterday. Like, how would he have not pitched?
That's what I'm saying. What were they saving for? They think he's a in losing games guy?
No, you know what? They were winning by too much to use him. That might be the answer.
So he might be the setup guy. Greg Holland might be the mop-up guy.
Could be. Yeah, but that big of a lead?
He was supposed to come in and just get some work, man. And then, look, I don't think there's any delivery that I dislike more than Greg Holland's. This whole thing, he like slaps his glove together and then he falls down. It's the weirdest thing. If I saw someone do that, I'd be like, yo, you are never going to have command, which he never has. I don't even know how he throws it hard. It looks like he's falling down. It's so bizarre. Anyway, I'm not in on Holland. I don't think that Holland is a setup guy. That's what I'm trying to say. Don't overlearn on this one because it was a wipeout game until it got a little bit close at the end. So I mean, think
there was some
Stomont
gross
setup guy
in this
and
game.
Wade Davis, bottom five closer.
Yeah, and even that, like by Monday, things could look different and Davis could be nowhere near the ninth inning. The Royals messed around a lot with that pen last year, so it's one of the places that I was very hesitant to even throw darts in during draft season. For all the hits in this game, Leody Taveras, 0-for-5, 4Ks, he was hitting 8th. They had him hitting 8th behind Eli White, who was DHing, and then Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was the leadoff guy.
And Eli White is the other center fielder, even though he's DHing, and Eli White had 2 hits and a walk. And they're excited enough about him to say, his manager said, I wanted to get Eli White in on opening day. So I have a feeling that Eli White is going to be the starting center fielder there for not long from now. And that Guzman, who they always love, irrationally perhaps, but also had a great spring in terms of exit velo, that they're going to find a way to get Guzman in there at DH while Calhoun is out. So I wouldn't even be surprised if today's lineup, or I don't know if they're playing today, but the next lineup has Taveras out and Guzman in.
Guzman in, White in center, yeah.
Two names on the Royal side that stuck out for me, Isbell and Taylor. I've loved Taylor, and he had 2 hard hits, 3 hits overall. You know, that was good. And then Kyle Isbell, in his debut, 3-for-5 with a hard hit. Rumble, young man, rumble.
This is not a bad lineup, and it was on a day without Adalberto Mondesi. He's got that oblique injury, so they had to play Nicky Lopez, and you know, Lopez, whatever, 9-hitter, empty bat. But 1-8, that's not bad. It was Witt, Benintendi, Santana, Sal, Soler, Dozier, yeah. Isbell, I think, could be a nice piece. And as you said, Taylor, probably a little undervalued. I mean, great defender, but has some power, has some speed too.
And he's a big swing or miss guy, so like that's actually pretty great to have in the 8th home, right? It's like, oh, he didn't do anything. Turn the lineup over. Let's start again. Oh, he hit the homer, you know? Bam, now it's a big game, you know? This is a good lineup. I'm disappointed in Brad Keller. I thought that this was a bad Texas lineup, and at home, I didn't see enough of him because he pitched 1 1/3 and I was like watching other games and I switch over and he was out already. So I would have to say he gets a mulligan though. I think he's earned a couple more turns through the lineup, through the rotation.
Just brutal. We got a couple more games to get to real quick. We've got to fly through these. Angels White Sox from the late night viewing. Anything catch your eye on that one?
I like that Luis Robert, there is a T in there, stole base. Stolen base. Max Stassi, home run. Bang, bang, boom. Dylan Bundy and Lucas Giolito. That was pretty much a pitching duel. I know that like there were some runs, but that was a pitching duel to me. I thought they pitched very well, both of them. And I thought it was a really good game. I really enjoyed it. A lot of really good pitching from those guys, some good hitting, some timely hitting, and a couple lasers and from Lou Bob and Max Stassi hit the ball 415. Cody Hoyer, who was already really good, debuted a changeup. I think he could be the setup guy before long because Bummer did give up some runs. Otherwise, I don't know. Shrug and say pretty good game. didn't play Vaughn.
That game played to script. I don't know why they didn't play Vaughn. They didn't want to play him in left, I guess.
Lurie Garcia.
You played Zach Collins over Andrew Vaughn.
He's a friggin'
catcher. In a
game
catcher. You were trying to win.
Tony La Russa, just what a dick I'm a dickin'.
That is a thing the White Sox fans should be extremely upset about.
All that you can hope for is Vaughn comes in against a lefty, rakes, Collins goes 0-for-4 a couple more days, and Tony La Russa wakes up out of his coma. Sorry.
How about the game you were at, Astros A's, other than the jeers, laugher, which were not in midseason form yet?
I thought Bassett pitched okay, but he's not maybe going to have a ton of length. And so what you saw in Oakland when he came out of the game was that their middle of their bullpen is not very good. Kolarak came in and gave up the goose. Is that a thing people saying? Gave up the goose. Whose goose is it?
I don't think that's an American expression. They may say in other parts of the world.
I thought Bassett looked all right, even though the breaking ball is 72 miles an hour. It got whiffs. I thought he was okay. Petit was sitting 88. Calera gave it up. The guy Goudouan couldn't find the. So that was the bad bullpen that we saw pretty much. But Greinke, 88, 89 miles an hour, carved him up. So I think you saw all of the flaws of the A's on display right away. Kind of a hit or miss offense, iffy bullpen.
I think you can throw some middling starters at the A's pretty easily this year and feel fairly confident, especially in Oakland, that bad things really are not going to happen to you, because it's not a great lineup. It's very top heavy, definitely some holes in the bottom half especially. Last game to get to, Giants Mariners. Buster Posey had the hardest hit ball in that game. Kevin Gausman was a guy that I missed out on for all of draft season. He pitched well before things unraveled on the Giants pen. Marco Gonzalez got knocked around a little bit in this one. What else stood out to you?
A little bit weird. Montero doesn't really give up homers. He gave up a homer. I saw a bold prediction, or not even a bold prediction, a prediction from Brad Johnson that Rafael Montero might be the first sort of established closer to lose his job. I don't know. Do we know who, it's a little bit of tie game is an interesting thing, because they might have been keeping their setup guy for after Montero, if in a tie game except it wasn't a tie game. They were going to win this game. So Will Vest is the setup guy.
Rule 5 guy, Will Vest. What are they doing?
I think Misiewicz. Mm-hmm. Misiewicz he's a lefty though, but I think I would say he came in after Montero. I would say that he is next in line. That's my guess, but could be Vest. And they could just let Montero do it ugly.
Yeah, I don't think there's a rosterable fallback option in this pen yet. I'd be curious to see Kendall Graveman in short relief, though. I think there's a chance that maybe he's actually the next guy.
He's a pretty good sinker when he's doing it.
He'd be the guy that I would think about if I was in a deep enough league to stash the next Seattle reliever.
Yeah, Fraley started and left, but got in three walks. So just after I drop him in my 20-team dynasty. I still don't think Fraley is a big of an asset. Hopefully, Kyle Lewis's injury is short-term, and as soon as Lewis is back, Trammell goes back to the left, or Lewis takes over and left. So I don't know. I don't want to overlearn from that Fraley and go try and get him.
No.
Slater's homer was 99 miles an hour, and Oppo, and I don't want to call it lucky. Yeah, I don't think any homer is 100% lucky, but I don't know that I saw that homer and was like, oh, Slater, go run and get him. I've seen somebody say oh yeah, you can get Slater 20 rounds later and get the same that you can get from Lou Bob. No, man, I don't think that. I don't think he's going to steal.
Wow, those
bases
are some strong drugs.
Yeah, I thought
that's
so
incredible.
Well.
I mean, we are the fantasy proprietors of whatever we're going to call it, the eat this, not that of
right,
player
exactly
substitutions, but wow.
That's pushing it a little bit.
Yeah, that's definitely pushing it. I think the cool thing here, though, Slater was leading off against lefties in daily moves leagues especially. I think that's going to play up pretty nicely. I don't know how much he's going to play against same-handed pitching, so I think that really limits his appeal in weekly leagues, even though there is some power, there's some speed, and the shortened season led to some pretty interesting numbers for Slater. We are going to go, because Ito has a chat that's about to start up. So
getting my cat gift right now.
Coming momentarily. You can hit us up on Twitter. He is at Enoceris. I'm at Derek Van Riper. If you don't already have a subscription to The Athletic, get in for $1 a month. You got through the weekend to get that at theathletic.com/ratesandbarrels. They'll get you all the columns, all the rankings, everything we do site-wide, $1 a month to start. You can email us, ratesandbarrels@theathletic.com is the best way to connect with us. For Enoceris, I'm Derek Van Riper. Don't give up the goose this weekend. Enjoy the first weekend of games.
Thanks for listening.